This is the Bischoff on Wrestling podcast, featuring former WCW president, WWE Raw general manager, one half of Bischoff Hervey Entertainment, and New York Times best-selling author, Eric Bischoff. Now, here's WrestleZone Radio and 120 Sports' Nick Houseman, and your host, Sports Entertainment's King of Controversy, Eric Bischoff.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to Bischoff on Wrestling. I'm your host, Eric Bischoff, coming to you from the outskirts of beautiful downtown Cody, Wyoming, the rodeo capital of the world. I'm so excited, you know, to talk to Medusa. We haven't spoken now in what, Deuce, probably a year and a half, 2 years since I saw you last time in Cave Creek, Arizona, when you were coming through with Monster Jam. But longtime friend, good friend of the family, part of our family, and somebody that really I grew up with in this industry. So this is a really big treat for me.
Oh, thanks. I feel the same way. Oh, isn't it sweet? We're going to start sweet and probably hit a few bumpy spots, and then we'll hug at the end.
Yeah, I don't have a lot of sweet. I don't have a lot of sweet in me. I use it up pretty quick. So let's just get right into it.
What do you got?
Deuce, before we get into, you know, how you started and all of the things that everybody would expect, how's your husband?
Oh, thanks for asking. That is so kind. You're going to make me, like, cry right away. Well, my husband is a command sergeant major in the Army, almost 30 years. He was deployed for a whole year over in Turkey, Syria. He just got home last October. He's been home for a couple months, and he just left again for another year, and he's in Qatar. So he won't be back until May of next year. So, you know, being a Army wife, I absolutely love it. However, his deployments do not get easier at all. And there are times when you just, you know, Skype doesn't do it, FaceTime doesn't do it, and you want to hold that person's hand, you just want to talk, and it gets so aggravating sometimes because you could be talking on FaceTime and all of a sudden it freezes. I'm sure y'all can relate. Or Skype freezes and you could be, I mean, you're having a conversation, or you could be having a disagreement, and you have to learn to communicate very well and understand each other in so much respect. And I so love being a military wife. I love the military. We have utilized it and used it for the positive for us. It has given us great opportunities as far as we're able to live in Germany. That was great. I didn't want to come back to the States. Germany was absolutely phenomenal. And it has given us a lot. And besides being a part, he's going to soon retire, and I'm sure I'm going to be retiring soon from monster trucks in the next, you know, couple years. So it's going to look real good here in a while.
Well, you know, I met Alan a few times, and he's so supportive of you. That,
oh, thanks.
That's one of the things that I think that makes you guys so special, because, again, you know, I'm not a military. I was never in the military, and I'm not proud of that. Quite honestly, it's the opposite. But, yeah, you know, when we hear about and we read about so often the sacrifice that people in the military make, and the families make, and sometimes you hear about it until you've seen it or experienced it, you don't know the depth of that sacrifice. And the sacrifice, as you're talking about, comes in just in the form of a relationship with someone that you love. And you agree to put that on hold for a long period of time. And I admire that.
Oh, thanks. I mean, there's much more than, it does take a lot on the spouse's part, you know, you know, when you think about it, the man goes away, he fights for our country and our freedom to give us the opportunity that, you know, things that we want to do and love to do. But the man, my husband, Alan, has given up so much. You know, he's given up half his children's life, you know, growing up and teachings. And but he is the strongest, most wonderful, giving, loving person and father. Even though some, you know, we all go through adversities, and but we make it work. And thank you so much. You know, when we first met, and God knows, you know, you've been with your wife forever, and I think it's absolutely wonderful. And I'll get to that in a second. But when I first met, I said, you know what? I'm done dating. I'm done. I hate this crap. You know, I am not going through this again. So my prerequisite, Eric, was he had to be taller than me, and he had to have his own Harley because he was not going to ride bitch on the back of mine. And there you go.
Well, by the way, he doesn't know what he's missing, but that's just another point.
Well, my Harley's a 92 Softail, and it's pink, it's magenta, it's a real stock Harley color, and real men ride pink. That's what I tell them anyway. So.
Well, now let's get back to, or let's get to, I should say. What in the hell made you want to get into the wrestling business back in the 86 or 87?
Oh, God, it was before that, actually. I was probably around, I started independent before then. I was in Minneapolis, both of us are, you know, from Minnesota, and I was going to school. I was putting myself through college, through school for, you know, for nursing. And I was out at a beach volleyball tournament at this restaurant bar, and my girlfriend was dating this Hollywood stunt coordinator, and she introduced me to this guy, and I thought, you know, I was a big jock in school, I'm a gymnast, I'm, you know, I can do that. Yeah, I'm really interested. I could be a stunt woman. It's so cool. And then I found out he said wrestling. He mentioned wrestling. I said, are you kidding me? You know, and he goes, no, you're an entertainer, you'd be so great. And he kept hounding me. And so finally I checked it out, and I left my nursing career. I started training independent in Minneapolis, and he introduced me to Ed Sharkey. And then from Ed Sharkey, I went over to Brad Ranging. Brad Ranging is absolutely awesome. And then from Brad, I did all my independence, you know, working with Eddie, and, you know, for drive 300 miles one way, made $5 at that. I didn't make any money for the first couple of years. And I lived off my savings, and I lost everything and was living in my car. And I thought, what the hell am I doing? I need to come to Jesus talk. What am I doing? I was going to school, you know. And back then, I don't, you know, there was really never any big dreams of women wanting to be women wrestlers. It just happened. It fell in my lap, but it connected. It was a great connection for me because, you know, just my childhood upbringing, not having, you know, that whole environment of a great loving family, no father, no, you know, no great guidance. And this was stability for me, believe it or not. You can, you know, we all considered Latvia wrestling stability back then. And it gave me a purpose. It gave me a direction. I could have made so many choices as far as, you know, drugs or alcohol or that, but I was such the biggest jock, I couldn't even do it. And I just continued to just beat that path and knock down the doors. And then I got a call from Wahoo McDaniel and AWA, and that's where I met you. Yes, yeah, and I'll never forget. I'll never forget. There's this great thing how I met, you know, I came in, met Wahoo and Vern, and but there's this little segment. I remember sitting at the desk, and there's this like little FedEx box or something in there, and there's this beautiful picture of the hot blonde, and it was your desk. And I'm like, oh, look who's that. She is so beautiful. You know, that's my hot wife, and she's a model. And then I'll never forget that, Eric. And I thought, my God, that guy is so lucky. God, they got a great thing. Look how, God, they're both good looking people. And then I remember, thank God, I want that one day. Absolutely. I never told you that, but yeah, I'll never forget that.
Mm-mm. It was, you know, and we were both, and I think, and I said, you know, as we opened the show up, I can't remember if you got there before, I think you got to AWA right before I did. I'm not really sure. My memory isn't all that great.
Sure either. I don't know who was there first, but I remember your desk with Lori's picture on it. It was awesome.
I actually still have that picture, by the way. And that little desk was in a tiny little part of the television studio that I was relegated to.
Yes. Totally.
That I actually built myself. And I'm about as handy with a hammer and nails.
You did not build it.
No, I did. I did. That was my job. It was like, okay, you can have an office, but you know, here's $120. You got to go buy the material at, you know, Budget Power and build it yourself. So,
right.
That was my deal. But you know, it was so much fun for me because, kind of like you, I had no aspiration whatsoever of getting involved in the professional wrestling business. I was a big fan of it. But it wasn't something that I was like striving for, you know, trying to figure out a way to do. It just was right time, right place, right circumstance.
But exactly.
I also had the opportunity to do so many things because, you know, you remember Vern was kind of like hobbling around on one leg. I mean, financially at the time and couldn't afford to pay a lot of people to do a lot of things. So, you know, you got to wear five or six different hats.
And yeah.
One of the things that I haven't told the story, I don't think anywhere. But, and I don't know if you remember this or not, but one of the first things that Vern let me do once he got a little comfortable with me is promote an event in Omaha, Nebraska. And myself, I think Kurt was a part of it. Baron was a part of it. Pat Tanaka, there was a whole group of us that all drove from Minneapolis to Omaha. And that was one of the very first house shows that I ever promoted. And we actually got there early and it was like, okay, we got to kill some time and nobody had any money. It's not like Vern said, okay, here's an American Express, you know, just do whatever you need to do. So we all kind of pooled a couple bucks and I think we got a room at a Motel 6 and there must have been eight of us in that room because it had air conditioning. It was in the summertime in Omaha, which is pretty brutal. And you and I actually were on the same bed, as salacious as that sounds. But believe me, I was on that bed going, oh, my God, I hope this woman doesn't. I hope this woman doesn't kick my ass.
I hope this woman don't beat me up. I probably would have choked you.
it was obviously a very, you know, group environment and we were just there to kill a couple hours because we didn't have anywhere else to go between the show. But you know, I jokingly will say to someone, you know, the very first time I shared a room with somebody in the wrestling business with Medusa. I don't tell them the rest of the story because then it takes all the fun out of it. But I didn't want to tell them that Baron von Roschke was right next to us because that just like is a complete buzzkill. But
you know what? I think what was Baron's son's name again? Greg. Yeah. For some reason, I think Greg drove with me. Because I remember Greg drove with me to a show. It was a long distance, and I don't know if that was it or not. But yeah, Greg. I remember having a long conversation with Greg at that time too. Boy, that just kind of stirs up a bunch of stuff.
Well, I don't want to bring up anything bad. Do you ever talk to Greg?
No. I just like, wow, that's just totally, my mind hasn't, you know, been down that road since 1988.
Do you ever talk to Greg or any, you know, Brad Riggins or any of the guys from Minneapolis that you came up with?
I have not spoke to Greg. I did call Vern one time many years ago about some tape. If he still had that, this was before Vince even bought the AWA tapings, and Burns' mind was about going about Ben, and he, you know, how he used to like breathe air through his teeth like that when he spoke, and he said, "Ah, Medusa, why? You know, I don't know if I have those tapings. I'm in the middle of a big deal." And I'm like, "What? What are you talking about? I don't have legal grounds with those tapings anymore. I have nothing of yours." I'm like, "What's going on? What's going on?" You know, and he never did tell me what was going on or what happened. And I don't know if you, you know, if he had direct business or contact with Vince, or if it was someone else or whatever. But he was just beside himself about not having any control of any tapes again, or you know, any of the footage. And because I needed it for something to see if he would let me use something, you know. But that's when the last time I spoke to him. And as far as Brad Ringing, no, I would love to, though. I'd love to, you know, just shoot the shit with him once in a while. But no, not really.
Brad, you know, Brad is, he stays close with a good friend of mine and yours, Sonny Ono. And I'm not a good, yeah. And I suck as a phone friend. I mean, anybody that knows me personally, including my family, knows that when it comes to, you know, maintaining a regular conversation or communication on the phone, I'm just the world's worst. But
and you have your own podcast.
Well, no. Yeah, but I only do that. I only do this once a week. There's a difference. But Sonny stays in touch with Brad, you know, probably once or twice a year. And, you know, but Brad is a loner. He's doing what he wants to do. He's farming up in Appleton, Minnesota, as last I heard, and hunting and fishing and enjoying his life. So I think Brad is a happy guy, last I heard.
Well,